I'm Sharon Stone. This is Engage. On Friday, June 19th, more than 200 voices will deliver a choral presentation commemorating both the loss of life at the Pulse nightclub, as well as acknowledging the lives and the presence of victims and survivors of the tragedy. Amor Eterno, a Requiem for Pulse, is a collaboration between the Gay Men's Chorus of South Florida and the gay choruses of Tampa Bay, Miami, and Orlando. It will debut at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale. Gabe Salazar, the artistic director for the Gay Men's Chorus of South Florida, was co-commissioned to develop the lyrics and organize the performance. Four poets of color from the LGBTQ+ community were asked to contribute writings. Leo Herrera, Brian Sonia Wallace, Amir Rabia, and Andrea Asaf. The seven-part Requiem commissioned composer Sonder Choi to arrange the music. Engage producer Richard Copeland spoke with both, beginning with Salazar, who started by explaining how the lyrics for the Requiem came together.
A Requiem is a piece written specifically to give honor to the dead and for those who have died. Sonder chose writing it in the standard of the Brahms Requiem. Brahms was one that kind of went off kilter, and he wrote it specifically for the living. You know, he mentions the dead and we give homage to the dead, but we don't even say the word dead until the very last movement of the piece. So it obviously gives homage and pays tribute, and it's very beautiful to those who have passed, but it's more uplifting in the sense that it really pays tribute to those who have survived and who are still, you know, living with the remnants of emotional trauma, physical trauma, or who are fighting to keep the names of those who are gone alive. And there's a lot of Latin and Spanish themes as far as instrumentation, because it was Latin night, and the majority who were taken were of Latin descent.
From a lyrical standpoint, the work incorporates poetry from LGBTQ+ writers, including Amir Rubaya, Leo Herrera, Andrea Asaf, and Brian Sonia Wallace. Describe the narratives that they incorporate in Amor Eterno and talk about curating these voices.
We had some conversations with some families and some people who had close ties with Pulse, and just kind of just talked to them and interviewed them and just got their stories and just kind of try to get the heart of who they were and that whole situation. And again, we really tried to make sure that it wasn't a complete dirge and just like, oh, you know, it's so sad and depressing, but something that kind of lifted and told the story of how brave they were in any aspect of what they did. So the first piece is called How Beautiful Is Our Mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. That's just a piece about the beauty of mourning and how it can be a healing and transformational process. It's a heavy piece, but it's so powerful. When I first saw the name of the title, and I was like, oh, what is this? But it's become one of my most favorite movements. And then number three is I Tilt My Head to the Heavens. And that one is just absolutely stunning. And that one is going to, you know, cause, you know, emotional stirring within people. One of the opening lines is, where does our scent go after all of the bones and ash are gone? Movement five is the movement that in Brahms is How Beautiful Is Our Dwelling Place. And Sonder was very intentional about making that dwelling place the dance floor at Pulse. So number four is called Always Belong to the Dance, and that has salsa rhythms and merengue rhythms in it as well. And that one's a really fun piece, just talking about what a blessing it is that we take it for granted sometimes, that we have that safe space on the dance floor as LGBTQ individuals, that, you know, a lot of people, that's where they flee to. They don't feel like they have anybody else as they go to the bar or the club and they just dance the night away. And number six, No Los Olvidemos, that's when it's in Spanish, and that's We Will Never Forget You, just paying homage to those who were dead and the ones that are still living. And then the last movement is called A Vision of Heaven. And it doesn't end on a very like somber piece. It ends kind of upbeat. And he was also very particular that this piece would live on just beyond our concert. And the last thing that we say is, honor them with action. So whether that action be telling their story, whether that action be going out and voting, doing whatever you can to honor those who we lost and to honor those who are still here today fighting.
I'd imagine putting this together, Gabe, was emotionally exhausting.
Yeah, it has been, but in the best way. We've been working with a group called Victims First, and they kind of are a group that formed because of this, and they work with the families of the victims, and they kind of do some advocacy for those who have been involved in tragedies like this. And we wanted to make sure that whatever we've done, we wanted to get their approval because they have direct contact with family members and survivors. So it's been a great process. And, you know, we've learned a lot of things along the way. And luckily, they're sending a contingency down of survivors and families that will hopefully be at our concert. There's going to be a special event in Orlando just for their survivors and their families. And I'm going to get to go speak and spend time with them. And I think that'll be really special because it'll be a week before we go on stage.
Did you feel a cathartic moment when you went into the first rehearsal and heard the assemblage?
Yeah. I mean, for so many reasons. I was out this last cycle because I had a planned surgery on my spine. And then while I was recovering, I broke my neck. So I had to go into an emergency surgery. So I'm also healing and I only have movement of one hand currently. So getting back on the stage for this piece is a personal victory for me, but also a long time coming. And I'm working with the singers. And the very first rehearsal, we had Sonder fly in, and because I thought it would be really important for him to be there and to kind of explain, you know, like what he was thinking when he was writing the piece and the different ideas that he had with the melodies going from each section to each section and how they would kind of intertwine throughout the whole piece. So it was very, very special to have him there and to be back with the chorus for the very first time for the first rehearsal for this piece. And it's just been such a journey. And the music is beautiful. It's challenging. The singers are really digging into it and spending a lot of time. And we're really trying to do it, everything that we do, even the rehearsing process, with the end goal in sight. And what are we doing this for? And how can we get our message across to keep on going forward?
That being said, what would you like people to take away from this experience?
Anytime I plan a concert, I would hope that whoever comes would leave a little bit changed, whether that be a more happy mood or a special song that resonated with you specifically that kind of hit your heartstrings. I want people to come and be able to just really experience the music and just feel the emotion and power of the music and the power of the lyrics. And hopefully that'll come across in the way that we perform it. I want them to feel proud. I want them to feel a sense of hope that, you know, even though things are a little crazy right now, that there is still a lot of good that is being done in our world, and that it would inspire them to honor them with action and to go out and share the story and share about this piece. There's a lot of compositions in the Gala World, which is the organization that all the gay and lesbian choruses are with, that are written for pieces like this, and they don't ever usually get outside of the Gala World. And I think this piece has the potential to do a lot of great for non-Gala choruses and beyond.
Gabe Salazar is the artistic director for the Gay Men's Chorus of South Florida. Composer Sonder Choi built the composition around a Brahms Requiem that stands out from the genre for having a more uplifting tone. He spoke with Copeland about why and how the commission initially came about.
I was approached with the ask of writing a long-form, multi-movement work to honor 10 years after the Pulse nightclub shootings. And at that time, we didn't know what type of work it would be yet, because there's so many forms that a choral work, a multi-movement long-form choral work could take shape. But part of my really writing style and my artistic tendencies is to lean on some tradition, but kind of reimagine what that tradition looks like. And there's a big tradition of requiem masses in the choral world, in choirs. You know, choirs have been singing requiem masses for a very long time. And so the first instinct that I had at that time was to do a requiem. And as you know, the more traditional requiems like Mozart and Verdi, or even, you know, the Faure Requiem and the De Ruffler Requiem, they're all settings of the Latin Mass. There was one requiem in the canon, in the choral canon, that was kind of stepped out of the box a little bit, and that is the Brahms Requiem. He chose to not write it in Latin and not do a setting of the Latin Mass, but instead he chose to do it in German and to assemble his own text, mostly from the Psalms and different parts of the Bible. Very famously, Brahms's Requiem starts with, "Blessed are they that mourn," instead of a prayer for the dead. "Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted," focused on the living. And I think that's what sets Brahms' Requiem apart. It's a very humanist requiem, and I thought that would be kind of like a perfect architecture to build upon and to base this requiem upon. And so I invited four writers. I gave them the text of the Brahms Requiem. I gave them the themes, what I thought the themes were in each movement. You know, there was the second movement of the Brahms, for example, says, "For all flesh is as grass, and the splendor of man is like the flower of the field." So there's all these like earth references. And so Brian Sonia Wallace actually wrote the text for that movement and played a lot with earth references. The second movement is of the Brahms is also very famously the funeral march. And so we thought we would co-opt a funeral march there. There are many different like references, but I really wanted to reimagine, to follow the themes from the Brahms, but reimagine it towards the story of pulse and the losses that we experience in the LGBTQ community.
Sort of a tightrope in creating music that acknowledges without being inappropriately slow, dirgy at one end or overly upbeat at the other end.
Right. A lot of it really is dictated by the text. And so, for example, for the funeral march aspect, "Who has planted their flesh in the ground" is the title of the second movement. And for that, you know, for me, that felt like a ground bass type of situation. So there's a form in Baroque music called the passacaglia, and that's basically a repeated bass that's kind of feels very grounding for the moment. But in this section, I actually repeated chord progressions, and that's kind of like an evolution of that Baroque form into a chaconne. And so I felt like that's the approach that I would take. For example, in the fourth movement, you know, the fourth movement of the Brahms Requiem is, "How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts." And for this one, we really thought of the gay bar as our dwelling place. And so what type of music was being played at gay bars? What type of dance music? So I thought I would incorporate some of like some reggaeton, some bachata, some salsa, some disco music into this particular movement, kind of really talking about the gay bar as our dwelling place when we couldn't go anywhere else, you know, as a sanctuary of some sorts. So in a way, that's the way that the music kind of is shaped at the moment. When I was composing the final movement, the Super Bowl just happened. Bad Bunny was very in the front of everyone's minds. And of course, like Baile Inolvidable, I was listening to that song quite a lot. And so there's this musical sense of like incorporating salsa a little bit in the final movement. But I also wanted to honor the tradition of fugal writing in choral masterworks. And so I actually wrote a fugue on top of salsa.
What impact did the Pulse tragedy have on you in 2016? And now 10 years later, what space does that memory hold for you?
You know, I immigrated to the U.S. in 2012. So 2016 was a mere 4 years after I moved here. Growing up in the Philippines, you know, watching Hollywood movies, there's always this sense of like what the American dream is, and that the American dream is tangible. And that as someone, as a young gay man growing up in the Philippines, where, to be fair, we're not really persecuted. The LGBTQ community is not really persecuted, but we also don't have rights. So it's kind of that area in between. And I thought like, oh, let me study music in the US. And I think when I moved here, that's really when I started feeling the liberty to explore that part of my identity in a way that never really happened while I was living in the Philippines. And for me, that was part of the American dream. That was part of why I moved here. And when 2016 happened, when the Pulse nightclub shooting happened, I think my image of the American dream broke a little bit.
Do you feel like that's something that can be repaired?
I mean, I am hopeful for the future. I'm hopeful in the power of art to memorialize our stories and to memorialize queer stories. That's why I decided to accept the invitation to write this work. In the beginning, I think queer stories are important. I think queer stories are being erased at this moment actively by individuals who have the power to control and shape society. A lot of the times when we create large works like this that talks about queerness or queer stories, it often gets siloed inside the queer community. But in creating this work, I wanted to create something that tells the story, acknowledges the pain, but also plays on the universal aspects of grieving, of loss, of finding comfort, of love. Because these are universal aspects that it doesn't matter if you're gay or straight or whatever color your skin is. These are all aspects of life that we experience. And I hope that through these universal themes of amor eterno, eternal love, I hope that they perform this piece, they learn about the work, they learn about the story. And I hope that this piece kind of provides that bridge, creates empathy towards our different communities, and tells us that this is something universal that we share. We all have to deal with death and grieving and loss, but also love and renewal and hope and finding comfort in community and with each other.
That was Sandra Choi, composer of Amor Eterno, A Requiem for Pulse. The performance takes place Friday, June 19th at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale. It will include voices from the Orlando Gay Chorus. Engage is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Richard Copeland is our senior producer. I'm Sharon Stone. You can reach us anytime with questions, comments, or story ideas. Send an email to engage@cfpublic.org. Thanks for listening.